This is an ABC podcast.
G'day, I'm Clint Jasper, and you're with The Big Country on RN. This week, meet budding vegetable entrepreneur 12-year-old Charlie Toll. He's been leasing land off his dad to grow a massive pumpkin crop. We hit the runway for a fashion parade with a difference at the Elmore Field Days. A camel milk dairy on Queensland's Sunshine Coast gets the organic tick of approval. And we head into the kitchen on Alexandria Downs in the Northern Territory, where station cook Lorna Dainter's making lots and lots of biscuits.
There's no use making just two times. It's definitely at least six times. I try to like do 300 biscuits at a time or like six dozen. And it sounds like a lot, but like when they're out working like as hard as they do, they eat and they deserve to eat.
300 biscuits at a time is quite a lot of baking. The challenges of cooking for 30-plus people every day on a remote cattle station later in the show. But let's start our travels in Tasmania, where young Charlie Toll's pocket money scheme has paid off big time.
All right, Charlie, if you just want to drive down there to the gate and open that up, and we'll go on through down there and check some paddocks.
Yep. Paddocks are being prepared for next season's summer crops on this farm near Cressy, in Tasmania's northeast. And being school holidays, farmer Rob Toll has an extra helper to get things done.
Robbie, come on.
Hello, I'm Larissa Smith. Charlie Toll is just 12 years old, but is already showing some real business acumen. Rather than making a bit of pocket money by mowing lawns or doing some chores around the house, Charlie is leasing 1.5 hectares from his dad. He's just grown a very profitable pumpkin crop, pocketing several thousand dollars for his efforts, and has plans to grow some more vegetable crops next season. You could say he's a budding pumpkin entrepreneur.
Charlie wanted to earn some pocket money. This is nearly 6 years ago, and he came up with the idea of growing a few pumpkins in the vegetable garden, and that's where it started. And then I think the following year he had a little patch under beside the sea potato crop underneath an irrigator, and I think he did that for 2 years, and I think he had 350 odd pumpkins in 1 year and sold them at some farmer markets in Hobart, and just friends and family, and it sort of snowballed from there to a hectare and a half last year with nearly 30 tonnes of pumpkins that we harvested.
So tell me how you planted perhaps some of your earlier crops. Was it all by hand?
Yeah, so we just went along with, like, stepped down a metre, dug a little hole, put the seed in, and did that over and over again. It would take us 45 minutes to an hour.
And then you gradually got bigger and bigger.
Yeah, a lot bigger, 30 tonne bigger. So I thought maybe if I'm lucky, 15 tonne maybe, that'd be good. But yeah, double that.
So what was harvest like?
Yeah, a lot of work. But yeah, we had seven or more people out there at one time just picking away.
The labour, where did that come from, Rob?
All sorts. Neighbours, good friends, shearers. They ended up knocking off early a couple of days and going around and picking some pumpkins for us. And it's always amazing when you put an incentive of a few beers on afterwards at the end of the day, how many people you get.
And you kept a spreadsheet the whole time?
Yeah, I did. So I started off and then we just recorded what we're doing, so ground prep and spraying and seeding and how much seed we got, and yeah, rates per hour on how we were working. So then I had some gold to pay back, something to pay back.
And who were you paying back?
Well, I was paying back Dad mostly for all the, like, for the gear. And then the labourers as well, but we paid them in like dinner and stuff like that, so it didn't cost me too much.
I think you got off lightly.
Yeah, I probably did.
When you planted the pumpkin crop, did you have any idea of how you would sell it or who you would sell it to?
So I already had a buyer. They do, it's Backyard Bounty in Hobart, they do seasonal vegetable boxes. So 1 year at Farmers Market, they came and asked me for 200 pumpkins. I'm like, whoa, it's a big order. But yeah, we supplied them with that, and then yeah, we've given them more every year. But then I ended up selling them to Hill Street, Longford, Latrobe and Devonport.
So you hit the phones and worked out how you would get rid of these pumpkins after doubling your output.
Yeah, it took a bit. About every 2 weeks we're doing an order. Yeah, but then someone from the mainland undercut me in Hill Street, so been unlucky.
Tough lesson to learn. This is the business of agriculture, Robbie.
Oh, yeah, it's never smooth sailing. But anyway, you never let them get you down, and we'll get up and go again. And anyway, he's still done very well. Sold a lot of pumpkins, and to start off like that, it's a credit to him, and it's been fantastic.
How much money did you make?
Oh, if I didn't spend any, about seven grand.
And what are you putting that money towards with what you'd like to do outside the farm but also on the farm for this coming season?
So, yeah, some will definitely go towards leasing the ground and seed. But I also would like to become a pilot, so then some of the money will go towards, yeah, become a pilot. And then I'll probably save a bit to keep me going.
What have you learnt about having this 1.5 hectares?
It's hard. Hard work.
Farming's hard.
Yeah, definitely. I can see why Dad comes home sore and tired. Yeah, it's been a lot of work for me and the labourers and Dad and all that, trying to organise it, get rid of it and keep it stored and just look after it.
And what have you learnt?
A lot of work in pumpkins. Oh, no, it's always good to try something different, you know, and it's been an interesting exercise. You know, I've learnt a lot myself, just not in agronomy work, but also in marketing and dealing in that vegetable industry. And, I take my hat off to everyone that is, because it's a cutthroat industry and you're dealing with a fresh product. And there's a lot of work goes into it. It's the best way to learn. You know, there's only so much you can learn out of a textbook, and your best experience is hands-on. And to do it from a young age, and I was lucky enough to do it with my father. You know, I grew up doing this, and I'm still doing it, and I'm still learning, and I still love it. And to be able to pass that on to my children, to be able to start, you know, at a young age and live and learn. And, you know, if they want to take agriculture on as a career later on, well, they've had the grounding to it. If they wish to do something else, well, hopefully what they've learned here carries on and helps them through the rest of their career, which they may wish to take on.
What do your friends think?
They're like, wow, you've made that much. And then, yeah, I think they earn a bit from helping out on their farms. But yeah, they're surprised in how much I really make and the numbers. Yeah, I'm definitely really lucky.
Well, it's made of like piping around the dress, like to hold it up. There's wire, hessian, there's rabbit fur, like a dead rabbit on it. There's like all different types of materials and yeah.
Model Sarah Truick is really working the runway this week, but she's not wearing glamorous gowns made from silk or satin. This fashion parade has a very agricultural feel. Think chicken wire and rabbit fur. Hello, I'm Megan Ruth, and I've got front row seats at the Elmore Field Days in Northern Victoria, where the National Ag Artwear Competition is underway. The rules are pretty simple. The clothes being paraded must be made out of agricultural items or farming byproducts.
And describe one of the other outfits that you're wearing.
One of the other ones I've got is made out of seed bags, and it's like got a sheep on the front made of sheep wool. So it's I actually like it. It's really comfortable.
What's one of the more interesting or memorable costumes that you've worn in the past?
Well, last year when I did the finals, I wore this one that was made by a 12 or 14 year old, and it was like a bird and it had like this cool mask on it. I actually really liked that one, so yeah, it was really cool to see what a 14 year old could do to a dress at that young of age.
Almost a kilometre of great, white, large, square baling twine was involved in this outfit. Ladies and gentlemen, not what you know.
Elmore's National Ag Artwear Competition is in its 18th year. In past parades, costumes have been made of spark plugs, bones and even sheep manure. This year, chicken wire, onion bags, shade cloth, high-vis flags, bean pods, even artificial insemination straws were the designer materials of choice. While it all sounds a bit wacky, some of the creations are quite beautiful and intricate. Livia Rosea, also from Elmore, is modelling hats and dresses this week.
So I get to wear a Hessian halter neck dress that has lots of like little pieces of crops in it, and it looks really nice. It's got this nice headpiece and a fan like made of peacock, so it's got all peacock detailing on it, and it's really gorgeous and long, yeah, and just really nice.
What else will you be parading today?
I get to wear this another halter neck white dress with lots of like little flowers made on it, and it's got this big cape that I hold and like bring across me, so like I open it up and it's just full of flowers and really gorgeous and summery and just beautiful.
And the National Ag Art Competition parades have become quite a hit of the Elmore Field Days. What's it like to parade in this event twice a day?
It's great. It's just amazing to, like, you feel so, like, beautiful out there and so many people watching you, and you get to just show off these amazing garments that people have worked so hard to make.
Livia is wearing spring fling. Feed bags and frost cloth were used to make this outfit. The floral embellishments were made from a variety of materials. Some have been crocheted from cotton twine and dyed with turmeric and antiseptic sprays.
So where did this farm fashion idea come from? Elmore Field Day's General Interest Chair, Lorraine Truick, explains.
In 2000, we went to the Field Day Conference over in New Zealand, and I saw it there and I brought it back to our committee and said to them, and they said, well, if you want to do it, go for it. And I've been doing it. This is my 18th year.
And what are the more interesting costumes that you've seen paraded on the stage?
Oh, there are so many varied ones, but one of the ones that comes to mind always is one made of bones, where the designer boiled up all these bones, cut them into little pieces and put them onto weed matting, and it just looked like lace. Brilliant.
And talking about the Elmore Field Days, you know, maybe traditionally people would have been talking about the farm displays and the machinery, but everyone is talking about the ag art wear. Does that make you a little bit proud?
Oh, I'm very proud, really, to what we've achieved from when the first garments we had to what we have today. I just can't believe people design and have the thoughts of how to put things together. It's amazing, isn't it?
Lorraine Truick ending that report from Megan Ruth on the Ag Artwear Fashion Parade at the Elmore Field Days in Northern Victoria. Who knew you could do so much with chicken wire and onion bags? You're listening to A Big Country. Still to come today, biscuit making in the Alexandria Downs Station kitchen, and a Sunshine Coast dairy gets the organic tick of approval.
We know them all individually by names and know all their little personalities and what they like and what they prefer.
It's milking time at a camel dairy on Queensland's Sunshine Coast. Hello, I'm Jennifer Nichols. The Kew Camel Dairy Farm at Bells Creek has good reason to celebrate. It's just been named as Australia's first certified organic camel milk dairy. In fact, it claims to produce the world's first certified organic pasteurised camel milk. It's a big achievement in just a short space of time. Kew Camel only started operation 4 years ago.
Sherry Garcia, how many have you got coming through this morning?
Milking? We have about 25 that we're milking at the moment. We've got some new girls coming through. They've had a few months with their babies and now they're coming through and starting to be milked. The babies will always come in beside their mothers because obviously it helps their mothers to relax, and the baby gets some milk from their mother, so we're not taking all of the milk. This particular girl, she likes to have her baby suckle first. And then she'll let her milk down. Whereas others are okay, just content to have their baby beside them. Some want their baby to continue to suckle the whole time through, and we'll have three cups on and one off. So it's just, it really depends on them individually, what they need and prefer to share their milk with us. Some girls are just bigger producers, so 6 to 8 litres. Some are just less, so 1 to 2 litres. And it can actually vary from day to day, sometimes quite a bit. This girl, I love them all, honestly, but this particular girl, there's something about her, I just really, really, really love her. She started quite nervous, and so after a lot of time and just building up trust, now we have this really good relationship, so I give her cuddles all the time and say...
You're about, half her height.
Yeah. If that, when I cuddle her, I'm like at just the base of her neck. And she just stands there and lets me do it. She's a gorgeous girl.
Camel milk doesn't come cheap. We're talking up to $30 a litre retail. But despite the high price tag, the company says it's having trouble keeping up with demand.
Lauren Brisbane started Q Camel, and she's just currently putting the milk that's come out of the camels on ice.
How much is camel milk a litre?
Ours retails for between $25 and $30 a litre because we're organic. Around the world, it's certainly less in the UAE because it's subsidised by the government. In the States, it retails for upwards of $35 US.
And I understand that organic status is something that's pretty special and that is pretty new.
It is. It's very new. We've just been given the green light by ACO to be in conversion for organic status. Australian certified organic. We are the only organic camel milk company that commercially sells camel milk in the world.
Wow.
It's a big deal. It's taken us 4 years.
What's involved in trying to get that? For starters, I've got no idea of how many camel dairies there would be in the world. I went online yesterday to try to find out. Didn't have much luck.
Well, there's a few. I mean, there's certainly some in the Middle East and North Africa and Asia. The ones in the UAE are very large and they have thousands of camels. And then there are a few dairies in the States. One of those has organic status but only sells raw milk. But in Australia, there's probably only a dozen and, you know, only really three or four larger dairies. So we are the only providers of organics, you know, to be able to sell on a retail basis.
Why is that so important to your business?
It's important because it's a commitment to the health of our customers. We follow very traditional methods of farming our camels. We also realise from research that it's really important not to feed grain, but it also affects the gut and the health of our customers if you feed them grain, so we don't. But besides that, we really wanted to be chemical free. You know, we're on land that was fallow for a long time. We've been here for 5 years. It all starts with the land, really, so it's everything, you know, the paddock to plate or paddock to cup.
Lauren Brisbane, how many camels are in your herd now?
We're creeping up to 115 with the amount of babies we're having born at the moment. We've just had a second flush of babies.
How much camel milk are you producing?
We're sort of around the half tonne mark a week.
So 500 litres.
Yeah.
Where to next then?
We have a lot of interest from overseas. We're really just grappling with just getting poised to get ourselves ready for those overseas markets.
And you've just come back from China.
I have. We have a customer there, so we went over and spent a little bit of time with them, as you do when you're developing relationships.
Why drink camel milk?
It's a health product. It has a different molecular makeup to dairy milk, so it doesn't have the dairy allergens. There's about 30% of the population who can't drink dairy milk because they're allergic to casein and beta-lactoglobulin. Now, camel milk doesn't contain those, but it also is packed with vitamins, but also immunoglobulins. And the immunoglobulins are so tiny, they're ingested into your body really quickly, and they heal the gut and bowel. So, you know, everything today is about gut health, and camel milk works beautifully for gut health.
So with all your hard work, Lauren Brisbane, how much have you managed to increase your turnover in that time?
Oh, there's a big difference from when we started. You know, we thought we were hot stuff. We were doing 60 litres a week, you know. We do that a day. Now, you know, well, more than that a day. And we're all over the east coast of Australia. We send milk internationally. You know, we've got customers in New Zealand and Singapore, and you know, there's a couple of other countries knocking on our door. So it's a whole different ball game, besides the fact that I think we have nearly five times as many camels. Yeah, so...
I'm just trying to feed and keep feeding the stock camp and basically Anzacs. They love Anzacs.
It's been a steep learning curve for Lorna Dainter, the new station cook on Alexandria Station in the Northern Territory. Since she arrived here in the middle of the Barkly Tablelands, about a four-hour drive from Tennant Creek, she's had to figure out what a stock camp is and hand feed a mob of very hungry potty calves. Then there's the problem of cooking cakes without eggs and making mountains of Anzac biscuits every week just to keep everyone happy. Hello, I'm Katrina Bevan. Lorna originally comes from Victoria. She's up for the challenge of cooking for up to 30 plus people every day and says the first few months on the job have been amazing.
This is a huge bowl of Anzac biscuit mixture. You're rolling them up and putting them on the tray. Actually, that's six times the recipe, but it can be like just one hungry like
mob.
Yeah. Do you often times the recipe by that, six times?
Yeah.
But there's no use making just two times. It's definitely at least six times. I try to like do 300 biscuits at a time or like six dozen. And it sounds like a lot, but like when they're out working like as hard as they do, they eat and they deserve to eat.
They've worked up the calories.
They've worked it off and they're ready to restock.
So how long have you been here at Alex Lorna?
I've been here for 3 months now.
What do you think out here in the outback NT?
I think it's just wonderful. It's just real, genuine people. No complications. You work in an environment where everybody works. It's not just me. Everybody works and puts in. You appreciate the things that, well, sometimes you forget, but you have the chance to remember to appreciate those things every day. Like Bruce, our butcher, made hot dogs the other day, and everyone's going, oh, hot dogs, hot dogs, hot dogs. And just appreciating just those simple things and being grateful for it, yeah.
Do you have to improvise at all when you aren't able to get fresh ingredients?
Yeah, improvising is the name of the game here. One thing that kept happening or does happen is you can order whatever you like, it's just you're not guaranteed to get what you order. So the delivery will comes in every 2 weeks, and you know, you try your best to work it all out, knowing that it's not going to work out through no one's fault. It's just life out here. But like my eggs wouldn't come for 3 deliveries, so that's 6 weeks my eggs just wouldn't come. So then I soon learned ways around that. Like, for example, all my cakes here are eggless.
How do you do that?
It's a funny story, actually. And this is one of the really good things about working here. How I found out to improvise with the eggs is just having people come through and just chit-chatting, because everyone's got a story and something to tell and something for me to learn from here. And our dog bait man, who was here, son is dairy-free. And he told me that it's simple, love, because you just add a tablespoon of vinegar and then that replaces any egg. I decided that the best thing to do was basically make all the cakes egg-free, and then I had a backup of eggs all the time. I didn't have to worry. Yeah, and they turn out so fluffy and nice. And yeah, basically if you chat to everyone, someone's got something that they'll teach you or you learn. It's just a total learning thing here all the time.
That's a really good tip. A tablespoon of vinegar for every absent egg.
Yep, for every egg. And they're so fluffy and good. And then basically that covers if someone was to come through and they'll be dairy free, there's no milk in that either, so I use water and it has oil in, so yeah, it's a win-win.
How many people do you cook for on any given day or night?
That's actually a really funny thing. My mum's asked me that. I don't know how much I hate. She goes, how can you not know? The station starts at this base of our station at 30 people, but it's never just that. We always had people passing through.
Is it what you expected being a station cook?
There's a lot more that I'm learning that I had no idea about. Everything from I didn't know what stock camp was, I didn't even know what a wiener was. I've had the pleasure of feeding the potty cars, which sounds really simple, but I can tell you it's not. It just goes on and on. Every day is a learning thing.
Yeah, a learning experience. Well, thank you so much for having a chat. These Anzac biscuits look like they're going to taste really good, so I'll let you pop off and put them in the oven.
Oh, thank you.
And thanks to station cook Lorna Dainter for taking time out of her busy schedule to have a chat with Katrina Bevan. We have it on good authority that those Anzac biscuits were spot on. My name's Clint Jasper, and that's the show for this week. Thanks to Kerry Dell for technical production. You can listen back to A Big Country on the ABC Listen app at any time, but stick around now for more great listening on RN.